You Forever by Tuesday Love Sang Grandpa, read to you by Blue Friend, September 2016, Lesson 18. We have known each other for some time now through the medium of this course. Perhaps we should pause a while to take stock of our position and look about us and think of what we have read and, presumably, what we have learned. It is essential to stop every so often for the purpose of recreation. Do you ever think that recreation is really re-creation? We mention this point because it is all tied in with tiredness. If one becomes tired, one cannot do one's best work. Do you know what happens when you get tired? We do not have to have a great knowledge of physiology in order to understand why we get stiff and sore if we overtax a muscle. Let us consider that we have been repeating a certain action, perhaps lifting a heavy weight with the right arm. Well, after a time, the muscles of the right arm begin to pain us. We get a most peculiar sensation in the muscles, and if we continue too long, we suffer real pain instead of just soreness. We should look into this even closer. During this course, it has been stressed that all life is electrical in origin. Whenever we think, we generate an electric current. Whenever we move a finger, even, we send an electric current in the form of a nerve impulse which galvanizes a muscle into action. But let us consider our arm, which we have abused with overwork. We have been lifting something too often for too long, and the nerves which carry the electric current from the brain have become overstressed. In much the same way, if we get an ordinary house fuse and you overload it, the fuse may not immediately blow, but instead it will show evidence of overload in that it becomes discolored. So, with our nerves leading to the muscles, they become overstressed with the passage of continuous current, and the muscles themselves get tired of expanding and contracting continuously. Why do they get tired? That is easy to answer. When we move, a limb in our muscles becomes stimulated from the brain. The electric current causes secretions to flow in the muscular structure, which causes the strands of muscles to strain apart, so that if you get a whole strand or collection of strands straining apart, the result is to decrease the total length, and that means a limb had to bend. That is all right. We're not going into physiology, but a secondary result is that the chemicals involved in causing the striations of muscles to strain apart becomes crystallized and embedded in tissue. Thus it is that if we send these secretions, these chemicals, into the musculature more quickly than the tissue can absorb them, the results will be crystals. And those crystals, having very sharp edges, will cause considerable pain if we persist in our attempt to move the muscles. We can only wait perhaps a day or 2 days until the crystals have again been absorbed and the fibers of the muscles are again free to slide smoothly and effortlessly over each other. It is worth noting, in passing, that when one has rheumatism, one has crystals in various susceptible portions of the body, which lock tissue together. Actually, any person with rheumatism can move the afflicted limb, but to do so would cause intense pain because of the crystals lodged in the tissue. If we could find some way of dissolving the crystals, then we should be able to cure rheumatism. But that is not yet. This is rather taking us away, though, from our original intention to consider some of the things we have learned, or, on second thoughts, perhaps it is not. If you are trying too hard, you will not get anywhere because your brain will become overtired. Many people cannot adopt the middle way because they have been brought up to believe that only the hardest work merits results. People strive and slave and they get nowhere because they're over-trying. Sometimes people who try so hard become overtired, and then they say horrible things because, quite literally, they're not in possession of their full senses. When we become tired, the electric current produced in the brain fades. It becomes less, and so the negative electricity overrides the positive impulses, making us bad-tempered. Bad temper is the opposite of good temper. It's the negative aspect of good temper. And if we let ourselves get bad tempered through overtiredness or through any other cause, it means that we are in effect corroding cells which produce current within us. Do you drive a car? Do you ever look at the battery of your car? If you do, you will at times have seen a most unpleasant greenish deposit around one of the terminals of the battery. In time, it will eat away the wires leading from the battery to the car itself. In much the same way, if we neglect ourselves as we had neglected that battery, we find that our own ability becomes seriously impaired, and then we have a pattern of bad temper. Sometimes it will be a wife who started out her married life full of the best intentions will give way to a little nagging doubt about her husband, and she'll voice those doubts, and by repeating those doubts a few times, she will establish a habit. And thus, possibly, without knowing anything about it, she will turn into a nagging shrew of a housewife, one of the most unpleasant creatures of this world. Keep good-tempered. You will keep better health. Do not go in for these slimming fads, because the well-padded person is invariably better-tempered than the skinny wreck who totters around with almost a rattle of bones. In this matter of the middle way, it is clear that one should do one's best under all circumstances. It is equally clear that one cannot do more than one's best, and effort beyond one's best is merely lost effort, which needlessly tires one out. Look upon it as one would a generating station. We have an electrical generating station which is providing light for a certain number of lamps. If the generator runs at such a speed or provides such an output that the needs of the lamps are easily fulfilled, then the generator is working well within its capacity. But if for some reason the generator is speeded up and the output is far greater than can be absorbed by the lamps, all the excess output has to be shunted off somewhere, wasted, and it also wastes the life of the generator, which is running too fast, needlessly. Another way to put it is this. You have a car and you want to go along the highway at perhaps 30 miles an hour. 30 miles an hour is good enough for our illustration. If you are a sensible driver, you will be in top gear just rolling along at 30 miles an hour with the engine rotating quite slowly. At that speed, there will be very, very little wear and no strain at all on the engine, which is working well within its capacity. But supposing you are not such a good driver and you charge along the highway in the lowest gear at 30 miles an hour. Then the engine may be going 5 or 6 times faster because of the gearing, and the engine will be putting out perhaps as much power or as much effort as it would need to do 100 miles an hour in top gear. So you get a lot of noise, a terrific gas consumption, and 5 or 6 times as much wear to accomplish the same aim as you would do in top gear. The middle way, then, means taking the sensible course, working just as hard as is necessary to accomplish a specific task, but not frittering away your life and your energy in overworking. Too many people think that they have to work and work and work, and the harder they work to accomplish an objective, the more merit it accrues them. Nothing could be further from the case. One should always, we cannot repeat it too often, work only hard enough to do the task in hand. But let us get back to recreation. Recreation, as we have said, is re-creation. If we tire ourselves, it means that only certain muscles, only certain areas of the body have become tired. If, for instance, we've been lifting our right arm too much, perhaps shifting bricks, perhaps shifting books, then the arm will begin to tire, will begin to ache. But our legs are still in working order, as are our ears or our eyes. So let us recreate ourselves by going for a walk, by listening to good music, or by reading a book. In doing so, we shall be using other nerves and other muscles, and we shall actually be drawing off any surplus charge of neural electricity from the muscles which have been overstressed and now need to relax. So in recreation, you recreate yourself and your abilities. Have you been working quite hard trying to see your aura, trying to see the etheric? Perhaps you've been trying too hard. If you have not had this success which you desire, do not be disheartened. It takes time and patience and quite a lot of faith, but it can be done. You are trying to do something which you have not done before, and you would not expect to become a doctor or a lawyer or a great artist overnight. You would expect that if you were to become a lawyer, you'd have to go to school, then to high school, and then on to some university. It would take time. It might take years. You'd be working conscientiously for many, many hours each day, and perhaps many, many hours each night to attain your objective of being what? A doctor? A lawyer? A stockbroker? It all boils down to this. You cannot achieve results overnight. Many of the Indian philosophies tell one that under no circumstances should one try to see clairvoyantly in less than 10 years. We do not subscribe to that view at all. We believe that when a person is ready to see clairvoyantly, then they will see clairvoyantly. But we do subscribe to the view that one cannot attain results overnight. You have to work for what you're going to get. You have to practice. You have to have faith. If you are studying to be a doctor, then you have faith in your teachers. You have faith in yourself. You do your lesson work in class. You do your homework when out of class. And still, to train to be a doctor takes years. When you are studying with us and trying to see the aura, how long do you study? 2 hours a week? 4 hours a week? Well, however long it is, you are not studying 8 hours a day and doing homework as well. So have patience, because the aura can definitely be seen, and it will be seen if you have that patience and faith. We, throughout the years, have had a tremendous amount of correspondence from people all over the world, even from people behind the Iron Curtain. There is a young girl in Australia with marked powers of clairvoyance. She had to hide her abilities because her relations think that there is something peculiar about her. If she says she knows what they are thinking, or if she can discuss the state of their health. There's another lady in Toronto, Canada, who, in a period of just a few weeks, can see the etheric. She can see the etheric power streaming from fingertips, and she can see the lotus flower waving on the top of a head. Her progress has been quite marked. She can see the etheric almost in its entirety, and we understand that she is now beginning to see the aura. She's one of the fortunate ones who can see nature spirits and the auras of flowers. As an artist, she's been able to paint flowers with the aura around them. To show you that clairvoyant powers are not limited to any locality, but are universal to the world, we're going to quote a letter from a very talented lady in Yugoslavia. We wrote to this lady and told her that we would like to incorporate within this course something of her experience, so she wrote us a letter giving us permission to quote from it. Here is what she writes. We've altered the English very slightly to make it easier for people to follow. Here it is. Dearest friends in other parts of the world, we really live in a time which asks us day to day to be or not to be. The time is over to sit like a cat behind the stove. The life, as well as the eternity, puts before us the question, yes or no. What yes or no do we mean? We mean, shall we starve our soul and make our body ill, or feed our soul and make our body healthy, beautiful, and in harmony? Why I always speak about the soul, something we cannot see, what the surgeon cannot take out and present to us on a plate. Dearest friends, if you believe in the existence of the soul or not, the soul is there. Have you a moment of time to spare, please? Do not run to the cinema, nor to the football match, nor go shopping or to a motor car. Listen for a moment, for this is a very important matter indeed. In the western part of our earth, we have not very many people who can see the so-called invisible world, who can see the auras of people. That means the light or the shadow. If there is a light or a very earthbound soul around the body, and especially around the head of a person, the soul is the eternal, undisturbable part of us. It is our higher body, and without it, we could not exist. I had the gift to see auras from my earliest days. When I was a little child, I thought that all people could see what I could see. Later, when they called me a liar or declared me insane, I understood that other people could not see what I saw. Let me point out the way that I follow. Have you ever noticed the lines around the wood in the inner part of a tree? It indicates the years during which the tree has lived. You can tell of the lean years and of the fruitful years. Nothing at all remains without signs. Nothing. I once stood before an old church and saw what other people could not see on the earth. Around the building was a wonderful light. Around this light, following the form of the building, were fine lines, as in the wood. I looked over the lines and told the people about them. It was a line for every century exactly. It was at the old church of Remite near Zagreb, the capital of Croatia. From that time, I was able to tell the lines around old buildings and to say how old they were. Once a friend asked me, "How old is this chapel?" "I see nothing," I answered. "Not a line around yet, only a light." "All right," she said, "this chapel is not 100 years old yet." You see, if a building has its soul, how much more has something living? I can see the aura of the wood, of the trees, the meadows, the flowers, and especially after sunset. This mild but intense light around all living creatures, around your dog as well as around your cat. Do you see the little bird there singing its evening song? How sprays of light are around the little bird, its soul flickering with happiness. But also, that little bird, a boy came and shot it down. The little aura flickered still a moment and then vanished. It was like a cry through nature. I saw it, I felt it, and I talked about it, and they called me a fool. When I was 18 years of age, I stood before a mirror one day. It was nightfall, and I was preparing to go to bed. The room was nearly dark. I was in a long white nightgown. All at once, I saw a light in the mirror. It attracted me. I looked up and saw around me a blue and then a golden flame. Not knowing about the aura, I was frightened, and I ran down to my parents screaming, "I'm burning! It hurts me not at all, but what is it?" They gasped at me, and then turned the light on, during which time they saw nothing. They then turned the light off, and then they saw me as in living golden flames. Our servant came in and screamed with fright. She turned and ran away. I remembered then what I had seen on other beings, but it was rather different when I saw it on myself. Now I was really frightened. My father turned the light out and on, out and on. And it was always the same. When the light was out, I glowed with the golden light. When the room light was on, my glow could not be seen so clearly. I found all this interesting when I felt sure that I was not being harmed at all, and from then on I took very great interest in looking at the aura of other people. Do you know what fear means? In war, I often was very frightened seeing the aura of my fellow men when the bombers went over us and the bombs fell down. Once when I was in a prison under the Nazi regime, I was in a cell condemned to death. I was taken to the torture chamber because I had certain information which my keepers wanted. I saw the aura of other people who were being tortured. It was terrible, so narrow around the body, so poor and without real light, nearly vanishing, nearly dying away, and worse still, when I heard the cries of agony, dying of torture, the aura itself flickered. Something rose in me, however, something of a holy force. Was there not written in the Holy Scriptures, "Fear only those who can kill the soul, but not those who kill the body"? I began to concentrate and to try and cheer up the others. I felt healthier. One woman helped me in this task. And at last the cell containing those condemned to death began to be more cheerful. We all began to sing. I came through all the questionings and all the long hours and all the pain unharmed because I concentrated on eternity. I concentrated on the real life after this awful dream. The torturers could do nothing with me, and at last, angry, they threw me out of the prison because I was demoralizing them. If I had given way to fright, to terror, I and my 16 comrades, victims of persecution, would have been killed. We of the West, we Europeans, have much to learn from the Far East. We have to learn to conquer our imaginations and to overcome fear. As I see it, the aura of Western people flicker a lot. They are never quiet, seldom in harmony, and our disorderly aura infects other auras and becomes like an epidemic. Hitler would not have succeeded with his ranting speeches unless the aura of people became afflicted and influenced by the aura of Hitler. Hitler could only succeed because his listeners could not control their own imagination. Are you tired? Will you read a little longer? Let us go to the poorest of men. Go to the lunatics. Let us go to a mental home in Zagreb. Many days ago, I made studies through the iron wire there, looking at the auras. But they were not the worst cases. A friend of mine introduced me to the senior physician, a very skeptical man. I told him that I wished to observe the auras of his patients. He looked at me as being worthy of incarceration as a lunatic. Then at last he decided that he would let me see some of his patients. At last, attendants brought in a very, very sick woman indeed. She was a terrible-looking woman. Her eyes rolled and her teeth ground together, and hair stood out like devilish flames around her head. It really was a fearful sight, but it was nothing to what I saw in the invisible world. I saw the soul of the woman right out of her body in a wild struggle with the dark shadow who tried to get possession of the body. All around was in a whirl and in disharmony. Eventually, the woman was taken away, and they told the doctor that the woman could not be cured because she was indeed the victim of demonic possession. So we will bring this particular lesson to a close with the remarks that what this very talented lady of Yugoslavia has seen, you can also see with practice, with perseverance, and with faith. Remember, Rome was not built in a day, and a doctor or a lawyer is not made overnight. They have to study to succeed, and so have you. There is no easy, no painless way out. End of lesson 18.